right, so I got to be open about what's happening here. You may be hearing some, I don't know, explosions. It may sound like there's a World War One thing going on behind me. And that's only kind of true, because apparently the Seahawks just won in overtime. As you guys know, we're live on, you know, we record on Sundays. And we're near Seattle, because football happens here now. At least until the Seahawks stop losing. Or stop winning, start losing. Either way. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. My name is Sam Mulvey, and joining me, as usual, is Rebecca Friedman. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm enjoying all of the soundproofing that could not possibly drown out the shelling, the blue and green fireworks that are happening outside Ask an Atheist Studios.
Oh, boy. And joining us for the first time, after much cajoling, is actually one of my oldest friends, Ron John. How you doing?
Well, I don't know if I'd like to be called your oldest friend. I think we've known each other a long time.
That's true. That's true.
I'm sure you have friends who are older.
So one of the reasons we were a little bit worried about having Ron John on is that Ron John grew up, I don't know, about 15 or 16 miles from where I grew up.
Right.
And we have a voice kind of in the same range.
As you might be able to tell or not tell. We might even make it into a game.
Yeah. And we have similar accents, to the point where when we briefly lived together here in Tacoma, because you're the guy who got me up here.
Right.
You know, our girlfriends or wives or whatever would pick up the phone and we'd have to identify ourselves so they knew who they were talking to. Because it got a little weird in a couple places.
Yeah, there are some stories of awkwardness and amusement.
Yeah. Speaking of awkward. Anyway, this is Ask an Atheist. We've got some interesting... We have organized the news for this week. It's there's some fun stuff. And this is the Becky segment.
The Becky segment. Becky's still here, despite any awkward anythings.
A federal court has ruled that the Fort Wayne South Bend Diocese in Indiana discriminated against Emily Herks, a teacher who was fired after undergoing in vitro fertilization treatments. The diocese argued that they not only had the right to fire Herks, but that even having to go to the court to defend their actions violated the church's religious liberty. The court awarded Herks almost $2 million. A diocese lawyer said that they will appeal to the Seventh Circuit Court and maintain that the case should never have gone to trial. So teachers going to court about religious things, this is sort of your living nightmare, isn't it, Becky?
It is. I mean, I work in the public school system, and so I think I would probably never be fired for undergoing, IVF. But here's the thing, you know, your employer is against this because apparently babies should be made with a man and a woman in a marriage. You know, they said, hey, we don't want you. You're not an upstanding citizen in terms of what we want to be modeling for our children that we're teaching in our Catholic schools. And so you're out of here. And the courts decided, no, actually, that's kind of wrong.
Yeah, I actually found this the part of the story that actually kind of struck me at the very beginning was that challenges to IVF just seems so backward. Like, I mean, in the backwardness spectrum that includes restrictions to reproductive health or objections to reproductive health, concerns about infidelity, concerns about, you know, living out of wedlock, or concerns about gay marriage or marriage inequality, like a female teacher having a female partner. In vitro fertilization seemed so 80s. Like, I actually thought we'd solved that one.
It's the political issue of the day, wearing hypercolor, is
right.
What you're saying?
Yes.
I don't know. I think there's something behind it where they think it's abortion because they use multiple embryos because they don't always take.
Yes.
Right.
And so IVF, one, it allows people to procreate without being in a wedded marriage. So, you know, two women that are one.
Oh, because
raise a child
people
together.
Have had so much trouble doing that without IVF.
I know.
Right. Yeah. It's like, but before IVF, marriage was a completely fidelitous thing.
Yeah. If you weren't married, you were chemically unable to produce children.
Or Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Or Henry VIII. I don't know if you've checked out.
Catholics didn't like him either.
well, but in his defense, he didn't like them either.
Yeah. The joke. Welcome. But yeah, this seems like the kind of thing where the Catholics have sort of painted them into a corner, is that they've taken this hardline stance on abortion, and in order to, you know, justify their dogma, they have to take an hardline stance on this as well. And I feel like if abortion wasn't the issue for them that they make it out to be, that perhaps this wouldn't be the issue they may get, that this would be an issue that doesn't matter to them.
Right, that they didn't, that they basically tied themselves to this. And
right.
So all all other iterations or instances of abortion-like behavior have to also be bad, as opposed to being able to say, we have a problem with abortion, but there are other things that are like that might be abortion-like, but they can't actually make that nuance. They don't have that opportunity to make a nuanced approach there.
Right.
And this kind of thinking actually is one of the things that that comes up when states try and pass a lot of these personhood bills, that they inadvertently end up banning things like IVF treatment or criminalizing reproductive health doctors who want to help women and families, you know, create families and make families, because you end up with fertilized eggs, with fertilized embryos that then have to be discarded.
Yeah.
So it's not just within a Catholic diocese. It's not just for one teacher at one school. You know, this kind of thinking does affect people in many different ways outside of religion.
Yeah. And I think the thing here is they're saying this should never have gone to trial. There's other people saying they shouldn't have filled out a form. This is once again suggesting that their religious rules and that their religious liberties should trump the people who work for them, because they are powerful and the teacher in this case is not as powerful, so her right shouldn't matter. Fantastic!
Right.
Anyway, moving on. Hameva Ser, an Orthodox Jewish newspaper, is facing international backlash after editing all the women out of a photo of world leaders marching in response to the Charlie Hebdo attack. The newspaper cropped out the leaders, including German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo, because the strict interpretation of Jewish law about modesty. Hameva Ser's editor told the New York Times that in their culture, women are not presenters. They do not advertise toothpaste, tissue, dog food, or anything else. And that's a direct quote.
That's a great
quote.
That's
really weird.
Like that's the list. That's what they came up with. That's the their strict Talmudic interpretation.
Car's not on this list, right? So cars are okay?
Yeah.
I can think of a lot of things.
You know what also isn't on this list? Support for free speech and anti-shooting people. So I think, you know, they're in the clear because, you know, for a by the letter Talmudic interpretation, if you do the close reading practices that is so inherent within all of these particular laws, you know, toothpaste off the table, tissues off the table, dog food off the table. But hey, cat food or free speech, fair game.
Yeah, going from our conversation last week, isn't getting around these rules, isn't that what you guys are about? You people. I'm going to you people, guys.
Right. So having grown up within a pluralistic Jewish household.
And having grown up as a Hindu myself.
Indeed.
Yes.
I wasn't certain if I was going to go there or not, but.
Run with it.
Okay.
So, yes, part of the cultural expectation is actually doing close reading and having an sort of end run around these rules. And how do you make the rules actually logically make sense and fit? And then what are the implications for that in terms of what you can or can't do? Here, in terms of depicting women in mixed settings with men, there's a whole bunch of things. Like people say that's promoting the mixing of men and women in public. Or someone may use this photograph of Angela Merkel to think lustful thoughts, you know, thereby drawing their attention away from, you know, holy study.
You had me at lustful thoughts about Angela Merkel.
I like the one where there's been a lot of photoshopping around this one, as you might imagine. My favorite is the one where they replace everybody's heads with Angela Merkel, like she's the cover of Quadrophenia or something
right.
like that.
Yes.
It's fantastic. And frankly, I love it when they do this, because this is relatively harmless in the grand scheme of things. Photoshopping things for your newspaper isn't that painful. It's who reads this paper?
Orthodox Jews. It's
Orthodox
from the
Haredi. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they want to self-select themselves like that, great. And if they want to continue to make themselves look completely outlandish and stupid, if they want to completely show how they're separated from the real world and from society and from civilization, more power to them. I hope they continue.
It's really nice when people advertise and make very clear their archaic notions.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah.
Well, there's another interesting piece of this, which is that from a journalistic perspective, the idea of like editing a photo for editorial content,
right,
is actually, I mean, the Poynter Institute for Media Studies in St. Petersburg, Florida, wouldn't call it haram, but if there were rules that they actually wrote down, that would be right up there.
They might go that far,
but in the world of photo, in the professional world of photojournalism, this is a fireable offense.
Yeah,
to actually edit a news photo for the purposes of editorial, just from an editorial content perspective, completely it's beyond the pale.
Unless you can make your dogma demand it, I suppose. You're right. They're editing the news.
Right.
To fit their dogma. This is what's hilarious about it to me, is that they're trying to change reality. This is literally them covering up their eyes and going, no, women aren't leaders. No, really, no. And it just looks hilarious. And every time they do something like this, or like we were talking last week when a rabbi wrapped himself up in a hefty bag in order to avoid touching women on a plane.
Right.
It's just another. It's another point. It's another talking point. It's another part of the conversation that we can have about this. And in this case, it's explicitly expression. If we're going to allow the Charlie Hebdo thing, you know, if Charlie Hebdo is going to make their cartoons, these guys should be allowed to do that. And this is why.
And we should be able to point and laugh at them.
Yeah. The whole point is laughing at them. The whole point is
let's laugh at the Haredi newspaper, the ultra-Orthodox Jewish newspaper, and say, look at how archaic you are.
Yeah.
There is a special irony in that Germany has finally come to a point where a Jewish newspaper would be willing to simply edit out the leader of Germany rather than talk about them. Like, that's a move for them.
Yeah, 20th century versus 21st century,
yeah,
I guess.
I don't believe that in general it's been a thing for, like, Jewish news media to not pay attention to who's running Germany.
Yeah, fair point. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about one country for a really long time.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Maggie used to say, man, never stop fighting. Don't ever give up. And as I look out across this crowd right now, I'll tell you, I can see her face in every one of you. I can hear her voice every time you speak.
His name was Matthew Hoffman, the candidate. And though he didn't understand it now, years of inaction, deceit, and fear had formed a cancer. And now, it would destroy him. AnnexRadio.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Wait, we can't do that. This cannot go on any longer.
Why?
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And that is the national anthem of Saudi Arabia, because this segment is entirely focused on Saudi Arabia.
Our partners in peace.
Our partners in peace. Two Saudi women who were arrested for driving have had their cases transferred to an anti-terrorism court because of using social media to voice opposition to the country's driving ban. The specialized criminal court in Riyadh was established with the specific purpose of dealing with terrorism cases, but have tried cases of activists and dissidents against the government. People want to drive, end up in terrorist court.
Well, here's the thing. Terrorism is anything against the state, and Saudi government has decided that use of social media is against the state.
This sounds like a conversation that we would have. Does terrorism mean acting against the state now? Is that now the working definition?
Well, I mean, if we're going to go back to sort of the Enlightenment understanding of what a government is, right?
Right.
Government has a monopoly on violence. And so anyone who chooses to use violence outside of the sanction of government is challenging government's monopoly on violence.
Okay.
So based on that, yeah, terrorism is exclusively people who decide to be violent outside of government. The problem is that includes the Seahawks game. So we run into problems in the modern era.
Good right, thing right. They're playing in Seattle and not in Riyadh.
That would right. also that should also suggest that we should be subjects of the Queen in that case. So I mean,
exactly.
Is terrorism now the word that means whatever we want it to mean?
Well, and to a certain extent, it always did. Remember, terrorism is a tactic,
right?
So it can be used to any end at all. And there's a pretty rich history of using violence in order to scare, i.e. to terrorize,
right.
To scare a civilian population into behaving in a particular way. That's government-sponsored terrorism.
This is one of the shows that I'd like to do on Ask an Atheist, but doesn't really fit. Like, uses of the word terrorism in weird places. They gave me 5 chicken McNuggets in my six-pack. Terrorism! That sort of thing.
We will get to how to respond to that religiously later in the show.
Fair
point. And also, just don't post about it on social media, Sam. So don't tweet about your 5 chicken nuggets instead of 1.
Right.
Or instead of 6, and you'll be fine. But, you know, we've seen Saudi Arabia add atheism to the list of offenses punishable under their anti-terrorist acts because it specifically goes against the regime and it goes against the king. I mean, here you have women that are driving and they're doing something that is against the edicts of the religious people because they don't think that women should be driving, and they're arrested for driving, and they would have been fine under their regular court system and probably received some horrible punishment. But instead, they put a Facebook post about it or tweeted about it, and now suddenly they're terrorists.
Right. Yeah. So wait, atheism is terrorism now? Again, I guess I should say again.
Right.
It is.
Home again.
Yeah. Man. It's going to be weird when we're not called terrorists. I'm going to feel really uncomfortable. I don't know, you know.
When you introduce yourself to somebody and you say, I'm an atheist, and they go, I'm a Pisces.
Yeah, exactly.
horoscopes are anti-Saudi government as well.
Yeah.
That would qualify as sorcery, a beheadable offense.
That's true.
Our partners in peace, people going to terrorism court because they want to drive a car.
Yeah, now granted, it's not terrorism court. It's the specialized criminal court. And it's specialized because the Tony Hawk criminal court was not available.
Oh.
I want the Law and Order. Chung, chung. You know, this is one of the new Law and Order spinoffs.
No.
Okay.
So, I am
Fatwa unit.
Indeed. I am happy to report that Raif Badawi has only had 50 lashes so far. But the Saudi blogger will have his case reviewed by the Saudi Supreme Court at the order of the king's office. Badawi, who was arrested for criticizing Islam, was sentenced to 10 years in prison and 1,000 lashes, of which the first 50 were administered early this month. The second 50 were suspended for medical reasons. They wanted to heal him up so they can try and kill him again.
So back when The Passion of the Christ came out, there was actually a huge amount of sort of popular discussion about what lashes are, and then like the last time before that was when Singapore decided to
prosecute a kid for chewing gum,
gum and throwing it. And so there's been a lot of discussion about what a lashing is. 50 lashes is potentially deadly.
Well,
1,000
yeah.
lashes is insane. It's 1,000 lashes is like 1,000 lashes is like 1,000-year prison sentence.
Yeah,
it's not meant to actually be 1,000 years.
Right.
It's meant to be interminable and fatal.
But if you say something's wrong with Islam within Saudi Arabia, in places where they can see it, this is what they do.
Right.
And the interesting thing here is they suspended his lashing, so they beheaded someone instead. And they've had a few executions so far. They're like up to 15, which is like a high. It's only the 18th of January. And it's weird.
The thing,
some of them are for like things like sorcery.
Yep. Sorcery thing. The thing that was so gut-wrenching to me was the first 50 of Badawi's lashings occurred on the day after the Saudi government denounced the attacks in Charlie Hebdo and said, we stand for people's right to free speech, and we think that this was very bad. But now we're going to whip someone, flog someone publicly in an extremely violent manner for criticizing the kingdom.
Did they actually say they support people's right to speech? Because, really?
When you stand with the French people and the government...
You can say you stand with people, but that's not the same thing as supporting free speech.
Right, yeah. Standing with people is just literally a matter of standing with people. Yeah. I mean, that's basically standing in the photo.
Right. Unless you're a woman and they edit you out.
Right. Exactly, which is never going to have... which is really never going to be a problem that Saudi Arabia has. So,
well, the editing would be better because you could just sort of copy and paste burkas in or something like that.
Right, you can just... I don't know.
You're allowed to recognize that women... walk exist. Around
right yes
but yeah okay.
We have women,
right?
This is okay with them. Everything else is out.
Right, but here we are. It's you can say you stand with somebody and then not actually stand with somebody. That's called diplomacy. So I would really like to see the wording. I might look that up in the break to see if they actually say they support free speech, because they clearly don't. They obviously clearly really don't. Merely being an atheist is a punishable offense, let alone speaking out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, otherwise, how are they going to notice you? Otherwise, they wouldn't have seen this guy. But, you know, we were talking about this in the writing show this week, and I was thinking about opening the show with, at the time, you know, Raif Badawi has had 100 lashes, and just opening the show with how many lashes he's received. It's sort of like the really terrible, horrible countdown to backpedaling, going back to 2011. And I'm glad they're getting it reviews, because they're getting intense pressure. Intense. People are looking really closely at Saudi Arabia in ways they haven't before. When we used to do the blasphemy talk, I would spend a lot of time about Saudi Arabia, and I eventually just had to start throwing data out because there were just too many data points. Otherwise, my talk would go on for 6 hours. And for a long time, people sort of ignore this, partially because I think, as you opened up with, there are partners in peace.
Part of it also is, I think the partners in peace part, and that's a blatant crib from The West Wing for those of you who have not been playing the home game of Sam and I.
Right.
But the challenge with our relationship with Saudi Arabia, and our relationship is that's purely an American construction.
Right.
Is that nothing is ever going to be done about this. It's not that our relationship with the American relationship with Saudi Arabia is going to result in some liberalization of Saudi Arabia.
No.
And in fact, the only liberalization that's been occurring in Saudi government has really been the result of the aging out of the older guard in the royal family.
Yeah.
And the increasing presence of Western educated, Western living, younger members of the family now having roles to play, where they're like, okay, well, it's easier for us to maintain our government, or it's easier for us to maintain our society if we let the other half of our country work, for example,
right,
and earn money and run this country. But there's really been no impact to talking about this. No amount of attention to Saudi horrific behavior has ever resulted in the Saudis changing their behavior. I mean,
right.
We were swimming in this kind of news when in the first Gulf War, for example.
Right.
And it never changed anything.
This is another situation where to go back to a conversation I had last week, where the intersection of politics and what we do here on Ask an Atheist becomes kind of unavoidable. Saudi Arabia is an oil exporting nation, I believe.
Yes, it's one of the OPEC countries. Yeah,
it's an OPEC country, and I think sometimes I sort of wonder if people look the other way specifically because it's an OPEC country. Something Frank Herbert called hydraulic despotism, which is what Dune is about, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about superheroes.
or giant worms.
Or giant worms.
Or better mulching through power.
Or Sting wearing a plastic V, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, and this is, like I said, this is the sort of thing I'm revisiting now that I'm thinking increasingly about how other political avenues intersect with what we try to talk about here on Ask an Atheist.
Ranjan, you had said that nothing has changed and nothing will change just merely by talking about these kinds of things in terms of prosecuting or flogging people that are critical of the dominant religion. If the UN, if human rights groups around the world really give enough pressure and enough scrutiny, and Raif Badawi does end up being, set free or have his lashing suspended, will that be a victory? Will that be a change?
I think that would probably be a change or a victory for Raif Badawi. I don't know that. When I say that there hasn't been a significant change in Saudi Arabia because of the amount in Saudi Arabian policy around women or around sort of cultural liberalism, what I mean is that all of their responses have been that kind of localized behavior that, oh, a bunch of people are paying attention to this particular dissident or that particular, female driver or what have you. And the result is that they make a one-off decision that they consider to be merciful to decide to look the other way or to simply let that person go to another country where they're not going to be beaten to death or what have you. They consider that to be one-off decision-making. It doesn't actually change policy. The driving ban has been in place since Aramco.
Right.
And it hasn't changed through the development of an entire military.
Might want to fill us in on what Aramco is.
Oh, I'm sorry. So there was an the history is vague for me. But we basically established something akin to the Dutch East India Company, but for oil.
Right.
In
that's
Saudi
a great
Arabia,
explanation. Right? Okay.
So we basically created a sort of a corporate enclave for the purposes of petroleum exploration in Saudi Arabia, because while they had oil, they didn't have the technology to actually build the infrastructure for it. But we had that in the United States. And so Aramco was Standard Oil's presence in Saudi Arabia to exploit and develop that resource. That's now basically all owned by Saudi Arabia itself as the royal family and the government.
I'll go one further and say that this may actually be, if he does get released, this may actually be a win for atheists. This may be a victory for atheists because I've noticed some of my religious friends who, friends in the Facebook sense, the people I watch as sort of my coal mine canaries, talking about this guy and supporting his release and supporting him not getting lashes, where they're a little bit soft on the concept of religious freedom and secularism in the United States and what that actually means.
Mm-hmm.
But when you provide them with such a cut and dried issue like Raif Badawi, they come out on the right side. And I think that may open up. What that does is open up dialogues that might not have otherwise existed. And so it may, if he does get released, it may be a victory for the worldwide secularism movement. The same way if Sanala Damaruku was allowed back in India.
I think I can see that. It still feels local. My challenge with my own perspective here is that I find myself frustrated about the fact that the way that I view Saudi policy in this area means they're just it's impossible to count a lot of things that they do as a win.
Right.
Which means there's no way to move the relationship forward.
I would say it'd be a dialogue victory, but not a political victory.
That's a fair point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That at least we now have a data point to say that they had an opportunity to do the right thing in the case of an explicitly in an explicitly atheist domain,
right?
And they did the right thing if they choose to do that.
Yeah, a political
which they may not.
A political victory would be a policy change. I mean, full stop. There's no other way to view that. And Saudi Arabia is not exactly a country known for its as you said before, for its policy changes, other than via entropy,
right?
And otherwise known as old people dying,
right?
Which sometimes is a good thing.
Well,
especially in these cases,
things move forward in a variety of ways. It's not like every move towards sort of cultural liberalism and an acceptance of marriage equality or an acceptance of other policy shifts in the United States has been completely intentional either.
Right. So we've been talking about policy for about 10 minutes, and this is Ask an Atheist. I can't stand with that. A prominent Saudi cleric issued a religious ruling that building snowmen is against Islam. Sheikh Mohammed Saleh al-Munajjid responded to a question about snowmen on a religious website, stating that a snowman is an image of a human being, which is sinful under strict Sunni interpretation of the Quran. One supporter of the cleric said that building snowmen is imitating the infidels, and it promotes lustiness and eroticism. First things first, I actually looked this one up. It's been reported by Reuters and AP, so I'm going with this. Every once in a while, you'll get somebody says, somebody issued a fatwa against paper, and then it turns out to be a complete joke. So that's the first thing I want to put out there. The other thing is, anybody can issue a fatwa.
Yes. Yes. The fatwa, it's the dislike button of Islam.
He really, really, really hated Frozen.
Right.
He wants his daughter to stop singing Let It Go.
Right. Which is horrible, considering the fact that the character that he is now impugning is one who's singing about the virtues of summer.
Right.
And heat.
Poor Olaf.
Right. He's like the most Saudi member of that cast. Maybe not Muslim, but at the very least, he's the most Arab friendly.
Sure, sure.
So here's the thing that's also a little bit baffling to me is that there was a supporter of the, yes, let's not do as the infidels do, that said, oh, and building snowmen promotes lustiness and eroticism.
Yeah.
So I think this says way more about the supporter himself than about snowmen.
This is a call to arms to everyone. We really have not been bringing our snowman building A game.
No, we clearly we haven't.
Because I have built many snow. We are men of Chicago.
Yeah.
I am woman of Western Massachusetts Smith College. You think we didn't have anatomically infidelis lusty snowmen there?
I'm not sure what that means. I'm not sure if you mean you had them or you didn't have them
we did.
Or you had them. Okay, all right.
And then there's the definition of had,
because is this really not a fatwa against frostbite in disguise?
That's true. Yeah, this is just, this is another side of the Christmas story, I think.
Absolutely.
Which side, Ron John?
I think it's the tongue getting stuck on the pole side.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, the snowman...
Keep going. I mean, okay, yeah, he's...
Hey, you didn't want to talk about policy, man.
No, I understand. So this is... I said this is just some guy, but he's some Muslim cleric, and as a result... people are going to listen to him, and some people are going to be taking him seriously. Once again, I want to hear about these every time they come out, because I think it makes my argument for me.
But isn't this just like, oh, and Pat Robertson said this, that, and the other?
Yeah.
And aren't we all numb to like the Pat Robertson said Twitter feed?
Well, we are, but there are people that are not.
He's getting weird. He's
moving
getting
awesome.
Into avant-garde old guyism.
It is really.
Actually, we may dig up a Pat Robertson quote about snowmen, against snowmen, and we'd have this weird convergence of Saudi clerics and Pat Robertson both hating snowmen and admitting that snowmen can turn you on and make you lusty and erotic, and I think that would be like just so amazing.
He does that show, and I sort of expect the camera to pan out and turn around at the crowd, and it's a bunch of people who dress like people think Sartre dress, all snapping, you know, and it's like, it's gone from being a Christian pundit into its own weird art form, because I honestly think he's completely just riffing on that up there. He's not coming in saying, I'm going to say weird ethnic things about macaroni and cheese this week. I mean, he just comes in, somebody gives him a question, he's like, thing. I mean, he's an improv artist is what
so
I'm saying.
I have a standard response whenever anybody says that something is a particularly bad movie. And it's that this might be something you consider to be the worst movie you've ever seen. Recognize that this worst movie you've ever seen was the best idea in the room at one time. Like, they threw out a bunch of other stuff in order to choose this.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring that up is because we are, you know, we just went through show prep before we did this, and we went through the notes and we figured out what we were going to talk about. The 700 Club, or God, it's been going on a while. It's probably the 800 Club now.
Yeah.
But they have that. They have production.
They do.
They have to sit down and say, like, what are we going to talk about today, Pat? And Pat's going to be like, well, on the wiki,
Yeah, they've got a budget in the tens of millions, and it's literally just camera pointed at old guy being broadcast to seven different satellites.
So that's still what comes out, basically, despite having creative meetings and...
Exactly.
Yeah. But the thing is, I think we're going to... I might start issuing fatwas, I think.
You should.
Yeah, I mean, isn't... I mean, couldn't the... Everybody should. Why not? I mean, let's own it. I'm going to come up with one. I don't know.
It's fatwa against coffee. Never liked it. Gives me indigestion.
Yeah,
heartburn.
Gives me heartburn. The Pope gives them out, doesn't he?
I think they're called edicts when the Pope does it.
Yeah,
it's a language thing. But he does them in English. No, does he do them in English now? And he still does them in Latin.
No, he still doesn't.
Does them in Latin.
Yeah, he got big old applause for speaking in Spanish in the Philippines.
Well, doesn't he speak Spanish?
He does. Yeah. He said he started giving his address in English, and he says, "I'm sorry, my English is terrible." And then he went back to the old language of the grandpas in the Philippines.
That would make sense.
Since Spanish used to be the official language in the Philippines, so the oldest generation is more fluent in Spanish.
Well,
than...
edicts, fatwas, you say potato, I say the death of personal freedom. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking about weird stuff. And maybe some policy, because that's apparently what we do now.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Psst. Hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah, worried yet? With STDHomeTestKit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with STDHomeTestKit.com.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Hey, podcast listeners.
Did you know that Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey is a radio show?
Radio waves and everything.
If you know of a radio station that could benefit from Ask an Atheist in your area, let us know.
And don't forget to let the station know you'd love to hear us.
So to help us humanize atheists in mass media, email us at stations@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And Becky and Ron John are with me in this segment. And we've got some good ones for you. For example, students in Florida won't be receiving their satanic coloring books. The students in Orange County High Schools will not be receiving their coloring books from the Satanic Temple, after all. The school board is now reviewing its policy on Religious Freedom Day, where religious texts would be available for students on campus. Religious Freedom Day is actually, I think, a national thing, and it was this week, and the board meeting is not this week, so it's being seen as a win for atheist groups who are fighting it, including the FFRF and the Central Florida Freethought Community, a group whose founder, David Williamson, we interviewed last week. So I really want a copy of that coloring book.
So I want a copy of the coloring book as well. And being a high school teacher, I think that there's so much stress piled on to our high school students that sometimes you just need a little bit of a way to decompress. And the crayons and the coloring book is a great thing, especially if you're being bombarded by tracts and Bibles and Qurans, and for that matter, even literature dissecting the intricacies and inaccuracies of the Bible from freethinkers. I thought a coloring book was a great idea.
Yeah, no, the PDF of the coloring book is available online. I might even link to it on this week's episode. But it's...
Here's a connect the dots pentagram.
I want a physical copy of it. I want a copy of what the students were going to get.
Right.
You know?
And I want want to actually go through it all, and I want to color it using only pastel colors. Like I want like the really soft tone Crayola colors.
Yeah.
Like no black, no red.
It's really interesting. The FFRF got involved. The Central Florida Freethought community got involved. They were allowed to bring stuff. And then the Satanists show up and they're like, oh, everything changes.
Now this is just too much. So you need a collection of people to you know, tip the scales.
I'm beginning to sound like a broken record, but as trolling groups go, the Satanic Temple is batting pretty well out there.
Well, this is the fun part about this, is that this is a situation where there was literally a conversation where somebody had to sit down in a room and go, okay, we were fine with the atheists. Like we were okay with that. They showed up, they had a conversation, it was fine. But this, come on.
the author of all evil wants to leave a coloring book.
It's an anti-bullying coloring book at that.
It's actually pretty cool.
It's how
cool.
to respond to people who say that your religion and beliefs make you a bad person.
It's really Sesame Street meets death metal t-shirts in the most friendly and accessible way possible.
I would love it if they would insert a little more Magic School Bus. Then it's just like golden.
It's truly a coup of epic PR proportions. And I wish them all the luck in getting that distributed at some school at some point, because I know it's coming.
It takes the heat off of us. No pun intended. And
wow. Did you really not intend that?
No, I literally just I realized I said that.
That actually makes it funny. Yeah. All right, go on.
But we're number 2. That's all I can say.
Number 2. A lot of people think we're number 2.
Yeah. But we're not. Now that I just made that pun, I'm trying to avoid other puns, and there's just no way around it. We're not the boogeymen anymore. We're not the giant flaming upside down elephant in the room.
Right.
I don't know.
They all work.
It's not us. I'm just happy it's not us anymore.
It's not us. If you go to their website, they say they don't actually believe in the classical Satan. So they are
an atheistic organization.
So as I say, they're kind of dinner theater atheists.
They are part of us.
Yeah.
They are part of they.
But I think they go even because, I mean, Levian Satanism, the Church of Satan people, they actually believe in some, you know, will to power Nietzschean type thing.
They're inhumanists.
Yeah, they're inhumanists. Where these guys, I think they're just atheists, and they literally just want to troll people. Like, if you were going to make Church of 4chan, it would be these guys.
This is the Flying Spaghetti Monster type of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
But specifically, they want to get on people's nerves because it's evil. And, you know, they also have actual beliefs, vaguely humanist looking. But does it hurt us? Because there are... This is a conversation I had with, I think, Red McCall out in Oklahoma.
Yeah, folks in Oklahoma often get really lumped in with Satanists. People in Oklahoma legitimately believe that atheists legitimately believe in Satan. They just refuse to worship God. And really, their whole idea is going against God, which we know is not what atheism is. Just because you don't believe in that God doesn't mean you believe in some other ruler. Or supernatural power. That's not what atheism is. That's different theism.
Yeah, it's not God. It's the absence of God. It's not some other God.
It's not change the channel. It's turn the TV off.
Right.
Right. I'm actually thinking about revisiting some of the stuff we did in season one, since that was 5 years ago now. And we're on the radio, so we should probably explain some of the basics of what we do. And this may be a good introduction to it. But... should we care that, is it, how important to us is it that Christians in parts of the country believe that atheists are Satanists?
Well, there's people in parts of the country that think that Jews are Satanists and that Unitarians are Satanists. I don't know how unavoidable that is.
It's not so much is it avoidable, it's what do we do about it, and should we care when something like the Satanic Temple gets involved?
Well, I think we need to consider whether or not that belief is something that's existentially challenging to atheists. Like, if countering a popular understanding or a popular misinterpretation of atheism as Satanism
right.
moves atheism forward, in some significant way, then yeah, it's worth countering that misconception. But if the people who think that atheists are Satanists, and therefore when Satanists decide to, or when atheists decide to play around with Satanism in order to prove a point, they consider that to be a legit move.
Yeah.
If countering that doesn't move, if those people wouldn't be okay with atheism, except that it was also Satanism,
mm-hmm.
then I don't think it's worth countering. It's okay. Not like they were going to like us.
Right.
Except that we're also Satanists.
So on the local level where atheists are trying to do outreach, that might be something that they have to worry about at AOK, or it might be something that I have to worry about when I sit at the university street fair. But as you know, existential policy, you don't think it's something we should care about.
I think it's interesting. I just don't think it's, I don't think it's a move. It's not something we need to get involved in. It's not like okay. They're looking at something that we're doing and saying, oh, you're Satanist.
Sure.
They're deciding that we're not on their side and therefore we're Satanists.
Yeah.
100 years ago, they were saying the same things about Jews. They're saying the same thing right now about Muslims.
Yeah. People, the thing is, if they disagree with you, they're going to call you Satan, full
right.
stop. Among Christians, anyway. That's been their modus operandi.
This flavor of Christian.
Yeah.
It's a bit wider than that specific flavor. It happens.
It does.
You know, you don't like something, they're of the devil. Even stuff that that may actually be really bad. I mean, everybody thought that Hitler was Satan incarnate, if I'm going to go all Godwin.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just what they do, and I don't think there's anything we can do about it other than meet it head on and say, no, those are the Satanists over there. Speaking of trolling, the town of Winfield, Alabama, passed a resolution declaring itself to be a city under God. The resolution, which was passed unanimously by the city council, was written to take a stand against the chaos and violence in the world, according to Mayor Randy Price. The mayor claimed the resolution didn't exclude those of other religions, but also stated that there's no other God. There are a lot of religions out there, but only one God, he goes on to say.
Thank you, Randy Price.
Yeah.
Thank you, and have a nice day.
So is that pantheism? Like, we all worship the same God? Is he saying everyone's Christian?
I think he's saying everyone's Christian. There are other okay. religions, but everyone believes in this Christian God.
Right.
Yeah. That there's just yeah.
Who guards our city?
Right. Yeah. The town of Winfield, Alabama, which I actually want to go and find out, like, what is going on in Winfield, Alabama, that is so worthy of protection.
Right.
That it actually needs like some special thing. Like, why is
there tremendous chaos, tremendous violence in Winfield, Alabama,
and or the absence thereof?
Right, and is there some neighboring town in Alabama? See, I literally want to go and look it up and see that, like, okay,
Springfield the city and of, Shelbyville,
the city of some other afterworld. Like, you die and you end up in, like, you know, in Winfield, Alabama.
Right,
that's a Pekin. Yeah, Pekin. Oh boy, yeah. Speaking of trolling, a Florida County Sheriff's Department is auctioning off rugs they bought that were misprinted with the words "In Dog We Trust." The two rugs are green with the sheriff's office logo, which has "In God We Trust" in it. After the public showed interest in the rugs, the office decided to auction them off, with all proceeds going to a local animal shelter. The bidding is going on until this Wednesday and has so far reached $5,100.
So many resources for puppies.
Yeah. I think that's an "In God We Trust" loss ending in the best way. I mean, new ones that say "In God We Trust" on them. But "In Dog We Trust." Now, here's my question. Intentional or not?
I think it's my first thing is just to look at how the, like, where the keys are,
yeah.
Right? That's like one of the things I do whenever I see a typo is like, is it a legit typo or did you literally decide to be funny?
Sure.
And so God, that's, I mean, they're kind of all in the same place.
They are.
Right? So I think it's easy to see that just being a typo in whatever design that they did.
Could also be a cover story because, well, you know, I just, if you're making textiles, I assume there'd be editing involved, but maybe I presume too much.
But then, yeah, I mean, we've all seen, you know, the great signs, you know, the great Reddit posts and things like that, like all the photos of awnings or commercial signs that have been put up, which have typos in them.
Yeah.
And no one ever looked at it until you decided to go ahead and make it, you know. It's like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. Let's go ahead and not copy edit something that's going to be written in 100-foot tall letters. That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
I will say this. I have actually looked at the photos of this, and I got to tell you, there's a part of me that feels like this is just a pixelation problem. Like,
okay.
Just like the rug's resolution doesn't really make it easy to tell that the D is a G and the G is a D.
Well, speaking as someone who spends a lot of time looking at pixelated fonts, take that as you will.
Mm-hmm.
It really looked like dog to me. But given that that's kind of a round font, it just could be noise.
And it's just a matter of being able to see whether or not the letter is open or closed.
Right.
And when you're doing it at an angle, because the In God We Trust is actually written on a curve. Mm-hmm. So it's actually text on a curved path.
Right.
For those of you following along at home and playing, you know, Ask an Atheist, the vector graphics game. But the curvature, when you're trying to do that text in the resolution available to a rug manufacturer, which is quite low. Not a lot of really good high res HDR rugs out there.
I was about to say that maybe what rugs need to do is ANSI art from the 80s, for those of you who are on BBSs.
Oh, that would be the best.
But the thing is, IKEA. I went to IKEA the other day, and they actually have a chat room rug that looks like that. It's a throw rug. It's a, you know, you can throw it mm-hmm. in a smallish room, mm-hmm. and it's got a chat conversation on it. I'm like, hey, how are you? How's it going? It's the weirdest thing ever. I kind of want it.
See, I want to actually like go and find like some transcript from some conversation that you and I had, or like some tiny chat transcript, and just put that, commission it as a rug.
Oh wow,
that would be terrifying.
The first time tiny chat has been mentioned on the show. Ken Ham, speaking of trolling, founder of Answers in Genesis, recently revealed in a blog post that he received a signed copy of the book Undeniable from Bill Nye. The book came with an inscription saying, "Here's hoping you find your way someday. You would be welcomed in the world of reason. We could celebrate the science together." Ham stated that he appreciated the gift and hoped that he and Nye could become friends. Ham also sent back a copy of his own book, Inside the Nye-Ham Debate.
Least authentic present exchange ever.
Yes, I'm going to send you a book that celebrates science, and let's talk about science. Oh, thank you. Here's a book about me and you in the conversation that we had that everyone else has already seen.
Yeah, what?
Really? Like, is he of the opinion that Bill wasn't there?
Matt, I'm thinking, because a lot of people came away with that. I'm not a big fan of debates, because usually, for a few reasons, I like debates, I like participating in them, I did them in high school, et cetera, et cetera. I still do crap online, but I don't like them for determining truth. And I think a lot of people judge whether or not you win a debate, especially in our neck of the woods, based on, you know, if you win the debate, that's because your argument is better. That's not always true. Sometimes you win the debate because your rhetoric is better. And that's a good skill to have, but that does not necessarily mean that the evidence is better. So I'm thinking, because I came away, like, I didn't care about the Bill Nye Ken Ham debate. Because, like, yeah, Bill Nye is going to say the stuff that he's been saying. Ken Ham is going to say the weirdness that he's been saying for years. They're butt heads. There are no change. Nothing will change. People will be entertained.
And they're not challenging each other. It's like it's a necessary component of the format of that kind of debate.
Right.
That they're not talking to each other.
It's basically
the problem.
Yeah, it's a lecture.
They're already not talking to each other. That's how we got here.
Yeah. Witness that versus something I would call a very effective debate, which was the Intelligence Squared Hitchens and Stephen Fry versus Anne Widdecombe and I can't remember the bishop's name.
The African
yeah.
bishop.
And yeah. where they took votes before and after, and they were mm-hmm. allowed to directly address each other, and rhetoric, it was definitely a display of rhetoric, mm-hmm. but evidence was brought, and there was a clear shift in the room after the debate. That is interesting to me. Mostly as entertainment, but mm-hmm. I think there's some sociological interest in there as well. But, I mean, Hitchens and Fry, it would have been impossible for them to have lost, so let's say they throw it.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean that the scientific evidence is wrong, and that's the problem with debates.
Right.
For me.
I do think it was a little bit generous of Ken Ham to title his book Inside the Nye-Ham Debate. He puts, you know, he puts Bill Nye's name first, as opposed to the Ham-Nye debate. Yeah. I'm reaching here. I'm looking for anything that Ken Ham could have done to maybe at least be a little bit authentic or open-minded or anything.
I have my disagreements with Bill Nye, but I like what he's doing specifically in climate sciences and promoting climate sciences. And I like the fact that he's writing books like this and sending them to people like Bill Nye. And Bill, he's like, hey, look how awesome science is. And Bill Nye sends a book back saying,
Ken
hey,
Ham says the book back.
Look how awesome I am.
Right.
Or, yeah, Ken Ham sends it back. I'm thinking that the Inside the Nye Ham Debate is going to be a book about how awesome, you know, how he won.
Right. Let's talk more about what I said that was right and what Bill Nye said that was wrong.
Yeah. And that seems so cheap.
Yeah. It just, like, if you weren't able to communicate that in the debate itself, then why are you deciding you're going to just go ahead and, like, oh, I'll append all of my additional arguments and all of my additional rationalizations.
Right.
In a book of my own penning.
I think I'm going to have to find this book, but I'm going to have to use my own rules, which says I can't actually buy it from Answers in Genesis. If you have a copy of this book, please let me know. I may buy it off of you. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. If you're listening to us on the radio, specifically at WPRR in Michigan, this is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. With me was Ron, John, and Becky. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv, email us at questions@askanatheist.tv, or leave us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. For those of you on the podcast, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the response to last week's show and whatever else we feel like, because it's the fourth segment and that's what we do. See you next week, because that's what I say. Welcome back to the fourth segment. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And the first thing we need to talk about is we got to get some business out of the way. I would like to thank Scott from University City, Missouri, and Rick from Elma, Washington, for meeting Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is listeners to Ask an Atheist to help us keep the lights on and help us keep the show going. You can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side, and it'll take you right to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production. No joke. And Scott from University City, Missouri. That's what MO means, right?
Yep.
Okay. Is a special one we'll be talking about in a minute. A couple other announcements. Seattle Atheists will host their annual Darwin Day celebration at the 2100 building in Seattle on Saturday, February 14th at 1 p.m. Isn't that Valentine's Day?
I select you naturally.
Okay.
Sam, will you be my Finch partner? Can we naturally select? I'm sorry, I'm dying here.
I feel very awkward.
You're killing us, is what you're doing. It's February 14th at 1 p.m. Camp Quest Northwest will have activities for kids ages 5 and up. Again, that's the 2100 building in the southernish parts of Seattle, I believe.
Yes, in Rainier area.
Also, Ask an Atheist is looking for physics and astronomy questions to be answered on the air. If you have any questions you would like to hear answered in a segment on our show, you can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv, or you can go to the website and click on the shiny red candy like button. I've already kind of primed the pump with a couple other ones because, man, there's so little I understand about physics. It's kind of silly. One more announcement that I have to talk about. It's one of those full disclosure things that I feel like I have to do, much like I did when I became president of Humanists of Washington last year. I've taken on a new job. I am now director of web development or People's Front of Judea. I don't know. I'm doing web development for Foundation Beyond Belief. Foundation Beyond Belief, we've talked about on the show quite some time, though not specifically recently. We'll be talking about them again. We'll be talking about them a lot. And because what they're doing is exactly the kind of stuff that I've wanted to do in the atheism, in the free thought movement since I joined up in 2006, 2007, or at least tried to in Arizona. And it's something that I want to do. And it's a way that I can definitely help. I mean, I'm in front of the microphone on days like today, but my background before I decided to kick it all in the can and do radio was I was a developer. I did a lot of computer stuff. I did a lot of system administration, website development, things like that. So this is using my skills for good and awesome, as it were. But I feel like I should tell you, because when I talk about Foundation Beyond Belief, I'm going to have a dog in the race. So keep that in mind. That said, Ask an Atheist is still my main gig. I love doing this, and I have no intention of stopping. So those of you who are worried that it might take away from doing the show, maybe at points, but here and there a little bit, but there will be people who will be able to who will step in for me when it becomes necessary. But the focus of my life is, I don't know if you've listened to the new commercial, I really want to get Ask an Atheist on more radio stations, because getting Ask an Atheist on mass media is, for me, is the thing I want to do. I'm really glad that there are a lot of atheists and humanists and skeptics who listen to the show, but you're sort of our second audience. Our first audience, in the reason we are on terrestrial radio, is to get the word out, is to get our voices to people who wouldn't otherwise listen to them. You know, literally people hitting the scan button on the AM dial. It's a bigger population than you might think. It is an aging population, but the other side of that is young people are going to podcasts, which is how you're hearing this. So if I guess I'll lead that into my third announcement. It is something you might have heard, the new commercial. If you have a radio station near you that you think you could benefit from having Ask an Atheist actually on the air, do let us know. And we'll contact them and see what we can do. Boy.
Can we hear it back now from Scott, one of Peggy's challenge contributors?
Yeah. So last week I broke show tradition. Ranjan, you heard that episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I started talking about things that have generally been taboo subjects on Ask an Atheist, specifically politics, where it doesn't have anything to do with atheism, skepticism, or the separation of church and state.
Or at least where the connection is a little more tenuous or a little more veiled than one would ordinarily see.
Where conversations that we've had, where it seemed like it wasn't really a germane conversation for Ask an Atheist, but I see a connection.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to talk about it. Like, just like today, today was a little bit more of an experiment where I mentioned the hydraulic despotism thing. For me, that's a direct tie to my humanism.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm deciding that I'm going to talk about it a little bit more and let the conversation go in those directions. And I wanted your feedback on it. And we got some feedback. And the first feedback comes to us
from Scott from St. Louis. Would you like me to go and read it? So Scott, our contributor, writes, "All, but especially Sam, I'm just listening to last week's episode and I'm moved by Sam's open honesty, really, over the last several weeks. As a regular listener, I've noticed the shift in topics, Ferguson, chaplaincy, etc., and the greater role of humanism in the discussion, and I fully support this. The purpose of the show is to demonstrate that atheists are people. We've heard this from the viewpoint of what we don't believe, but there's no better way to express the personhood of atheists than to talk about what you, we, they do believe. If that's best described by humanism, then have at it. I'm not sure I'm a humanist myself, but at least something like it. And I'm sure I'll disagree with you over some topics, as I already have from time to time, but the discussion and give and take of ideas is a critical component of all of us evolving our own beliefs and learning to see eye to eye with the beliefs of others. For these reasons, I continue to support Ask an Atheist with my financial contribution. As Peggy did, I invite others to join in, leave a message, send an email, or make a contribution. This show is here because our support gives Sam, Becky, and everybody else the chance to speak, and I, for one, need them to keep doing it. Thanks for everything. Scott from St. Louis."
Thank you. I don't have a particularly intelligent response to that, other than I'm glad you feel that way. Although it does give me a chance to sort of hone something I said, or at least temper something I said last week, where if you are a person whose patriotism makes you believe that America can do no wrong, it's time for you to move on. I still believe that, but what this email makes clear, and something that I still want to see, is I don't want every voice on the show or every email we read or every comment we have to be dogmatically in alignment. Of course not.
Or ideologically in alignment?
Or ideologically in alignment.
You're not looking for a chorus.
I'm not looking. I'm specifically
looking for a conversation.
Yeah. I don't think we can effectively do our job on Ask an Atheist as people who, as getting the voice of atheists out there, as if I only have one voice and one opinion being broadcast from this studio. So I do want to hear other, if you disagree with me, I do want to hear from you. I'd like to have that conversation with you. And I even said so last week. If you think I'm missing, if you think I'm missing something when I say I really want to be able to say on my show that torture is bad, if you think there's a side of the argument I'm not getting, you're gonna have a hard time convincing me. But I'm not gonna get any better. I'm not going to improve. My arguments aren't going to become better and more reality based. Just, you know, sitting in a vacuum chamber. I need that conflict. I do believe good arguments, and frankly, the scientific method seems to agree here that some level of conflict really improves the arguments, the conversations, the theories. So I'm not looking to get away from that. I'm specifically steering into that. So do keep that in mind. Interesting enough that you're here, Ron John, since we're talking about the torture thing. Part of the reason that I said on the show, I really want to be able to say torture is bad, is because of something you're thinking of putting together.
So, yeah, so in the next, so in the last, I guess, when was it released? So about a month and a half ago?
Yeah.
There's a Senate Select Committee that has oversight over Central Intelligence Agency and over intelligence gathering operations in the United States generally, that has finally released a 600-page unclassified executive summary
mm-hmm.
of their findings on torture and detention by the Central Intelligence Agency. In this document, they explicitly call what was done torture. In fact, the report is specifically torture and about torture and indefinite at torture and detention.
Mm-hmm.
We've been hearing a lot about this. We've heard, and there's been a lot of voices that have been talking about, we call it torture. The New York Times recently decided they're going to call it torture after the report came out.
Yeah.
But before that, they were calling it enhanced interrogation. They were adopting the American government's terminology on the subject, which was really a legalistic construction designed to kind of make sure that we weren't copping to torture at any time.
Right.
I continue to be a fan and a proponent of trying to get our hands around our minds around this idea. And there's a lot of different ways to do it. Sometimes it's conversation. Sometimes it's, having debates about it. Sometimes it's reading every single pundit's statements about these kinds of things, which leads us to Hitchens and actually being waterboarded.
Right.
And that kind of stuff. But I've always felt that one of the strongest things that happened when I was a kid about a similar thing was the Truth and Reconciliation hearings that occurred in the aftermath of apartheid. When Nelson Mandela was president of South Africa. And these hearings were really about honestly telling the stories that came out that were not being told that allowed apartheid to persist.
Right.
And to that end, I've decided that as a sort of, and I feel like I can't even talk about this without realizing that it seems almost self-serving. So I'm just going to say it. I'm going to read it. I'm going to read the whole 600-page executive summary the 600-page report issued by the Senate committee about detention and torture on behalf of the American people.
Right.
And each page is just going to go into the fire afterwards. It's probably going to take about 8 hours to read, but I'm going to read it out loud, and I'm inviting people to participate in this in whatever way.
So are you planning on reading the whole thing yourself, or?
I don't know. I like the logistics of it, I haven't figured out yet. We're trying to figure out where we're going to do it, if we're going to do it in a public place, or we're going to do it at my house. I need to find a place where I can actually have a fire nearby, so there's some logistical challenges. But I don't know the logistics of it, because whenever I start thinking about the logistics, it just the self-serving nature of it, the personalness of it, just kind of pops up for me, and it feels weird, but I'm gonna have to get through that.
Yeah.
But part of this is just for me to come to grips with what has been done in my name.
Right.
And I know that I'm not the only person in my circle of friends and colleagues who feels that this has been done in my name or in our name, where we never asked for this, we would have never asked for this, and now that it's been done in our name, we have to own it.
Yeah.
And part of that ownership is just at least going back to the original statements that were made and just reading it.
I mean, it starts with 9/11 mm-hmm. and the Patriot Act, and, you know, every time something like history is full of examples of people taking advantage of an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I'm beginning to feel like this torturous enhanced interrogation program
mm-hmm.
Might be an example of that. And yeah, it was done in the defense of the United States. The United States believes that it's a country that represents and is made up of its citizens. Therefore, it was done theoretically in our name. And
right. Which to our understanding is actually a unique thing. Like, we, at the time when the Constitution was written and when the founding fathers, who we talk a big game about all the time,
right.
Decided they were going to do this, they were actually trying to do something fairly unique. In fact, the only other people who were doing something similar at the time were the French.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me is that the same conversation that I feel like I'm trying to spur in myself by doing this out loud reading is actually something similar to what may be happening. Like, the next iteration of this might be happening in France with the aftermath of the Charlie Hebdo shootings.
And like I said last week, with sectarian violence on the rise, seemingly on the rise, having watched people die on television several times in the last month, I said that, you know, the people who, the moderates are going to have to stand up and say something about it and take ownership, take responsibility without accepting blame. And I feel like if people choose to do that, my responsibility will be to support people who make that choice. This is turning the tables on it.
Mm-hmm.
I am the moderate here, and this is me standing up and saying, this is not the country I want to live in. This is not something I want to be a part of. And I'm going to go to the people who feel differently and convince them and to say that if we are going to be a moral force or a moral people,
right,
and state actors and deal in terms like power projection,
mm-hmm.
It would be nice if we had some sort of moral standing. It would be nice. And when you torture people, I don't feel like you do.
I think this does intersect intensely with secular humanism. You may have religious folks that are against torture and detention based on their religious convictions. You have people that are for it based on their religious convictions. But for someone that doesn't believe in God, that doesn't believe in an afterlife that is a reward or a punishment, having to come to terms with our actions and our collective actions and who we stand for is an intensely humanistic act.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it's the original sort of inspiration for this really was the release of the grand jury testimony in Ferguson,
right.
Where there was literally a document that stated all of the reasons why this was not a question that even needed to be asked, that whether or not the officer had the right to do this and whether or not he was in the wrong. There was a document that actually explained all of that entire argument, and we had it all transcribed. We could just read it.
Right.
We seldom have that clear of a translatable statement of, here's a decision that was made, this is why it was made. And the legal framework that we live in the United States and in a number of other countries where we actually have transparency around these types of proceedings gives us a unique opportunity to learn about it, to see more about it, to hear more about it, and if necessary, to wear it.
Right.
And as Americans, we kind of have to wear that. When it's done in our name, it's done literally, it's done at our behest, it's done at our...
Yeah.
Done with our permission. We have the ability to participate.
And when you were talking about this idea, and this was the turning point for me when I realized I couldn't not talk about stuff like this on Ask an Atheist anymore, is I fully intend to participate in this project of yours in whatever way I can. And it's going to be very difficult for me to separate that from what I do in this studio for me personally. And, you know, I'm going to talk about it on social media. May even do a commercial here on the, you know, try to promote it here on the show. And after a while, I just decided that I didn't want to separate it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I in my mind, this has never been an issue separate from my humanism or my free thought or atheism, to me, these are related concepts. Now, I understand that for other atheists, they're not related concepts. Some people have it differently. There's a population of people out there that believe as atheists, as atheist activists, we should only be talking about religion and the harm of religion, full stop. Mm-hmm. And if you want that kind of activism, you're certainly welcome to do that. And if you do something, and I'll definitely have people like that on the show, because you're atheists, you have a voice. I feel it's my job to make that voice heard as much as I can. But it's not mine. And if I'm going to let other people have their stories, maybe I should have mine.
The interplay between your journalism role and your activism role is something, and it's exactly that, right?
Right.
You have a platform that you can use in order to allow other people to have a voice, and thereby you contribute to the humanizing of atheism.
Yeah, and
you also are a human who happens to be an atheist. Your story is just as relevant as everybody else's stories, and it would be kind of weird if your story was the one story that wasn't told on your own show, that you could never be a guest here.
That was my position for 4 years, is I'm merely the ombudsman. I'm here to introduce you to other people and show you their stories.
Ask some other atheist.
Yeah. But as the show has evolved over the years, and we started out on cable access show, cable access show, the production team, which at the time I was only a junior partner, they wanted something that looked a lot like the Atheist Experience. And then it stopped being on television and I found a radio home for it. Other people didn't really want to be involved in radio at the time, and walked away and left with our thanks and on good terms. I don't want to make it sound like it was a huge drama.
But some did follow and continue.
And the show evolved a lot into something that is, in some ways, a lot more traditional radio. There's a lot, I give my opinion a lot more. There's a lot more discussion. And in some ways that aren't. We digress a little bit more. There's a definite geek culture influence on the show, which you really don't hear in talk radio these days, because geek culture is usually 10 years younger than your average.
I was going to say just the age factor.
Yeah. And for me, this is part of it is getting atheism out there. Part of it is trying to make a medium that I love relevant in the 21st century. And so the show evolved and I kept sticking to this weird editorial concept. And I guess this year I just said, you know what? That's silly. I need to stop doing that. I need to be more myself, because I play a character on the show, straight up. That I've referred to it a couple times, but my inability to pronounce names is factual. I can't pronounce anything.
That is an authentic element of Sam.
Yeah, I am ridiculously from where I'm from, but there's a lot of stuff that I claim to not know on the show that I actually know a little bit about, because I feel like what I'm doing is introducing people who don't know things to the topic. And I feel like I'm a stand-in when I'm doing an interview. I'm a stand-in for a guest, and everybody in the crowd is going to know every part of what we're talking about, because crowds in aggregate contain a lot of knowledge.
Right.
Efficacy of that knowledge aside, but
you play the useful novice.
Right.
Right.
Individually, somebody's not going to understand every phase of the conversation. So what I try to do in my interviews is, if I get something, I go, hey, what's that mean? You know, and that's led to a certain style of, this is really navel gazing and I want to move on. It's led to a certain style of personality on the show, which is increasingly not what I want to be. So this is me changing. We also have, this is me changing. I should give that a little bit more weight. We also have a voicemail. Which we should play.
Hi, this is Jonathan Ariel out here in Wellington, Utah. I was just listening to the most recent episode that you guys posted there about looking into politics and doing the whole punditry at least a little bit. And I have to say that, Mr. Mulvey, it's fine with me. I understand that when it comes to all this lovely mess with what's going on in Australia and in various different aspects, that comes to trying to look towards human rights, particularly for those of the non-believer slash whatever status that atheists, agnostics, and anti-theists and humanists have a tendency to populate. And it does cross that line, and it just does, that politics and law, or as I like to say, law being politics by other means, it's always going to overlap. And that's okay that it does. I really do think that in all of our best interest is to see where sometimes those things do overlap.
Jonathan's a longtime listener.
Yeah, and we mention his full name because he specifically asks us to do that. Mm-hmm. So we include it. And that it's a powerful statement, I think. Thank you very much. And I think you have your mind around exactly why I think we need to evolve the way we do. And I like to end on a high note, or at least a weird note. You want to know the biggest problem with last week's episode was?
Can I just? That, Sam?
I was listening to the audio and I was going through what I was saying, and I'm halfway through it, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, I sound like Glenn Beck.
Oh dear! There's no chalkboards here. Sam's not crying.
Yeah,
he's not dashing huge circles over words and doing numerology.
Yeah, Glenn Beck.
Although he is wearing glasses, so maybe.
If you're,
maybe, and you never see Sam and Glenn Beck at the same time. I just want to point this out.
That's true.
So maybe
Glenn Beck is sort of the opposite of what I'm trying to do with talk radio. He just sticks with all the old tropes, and it just isn't catching people the way it used to. I actually did look up the book, Inside the Nye Ham Debate, online. I found one in a description of it. It's available for as low as $10. And it goes, the debate to determine whether or not creation is a viable origins model in today's modern scientific era includes a full transcript of the live debate telecast. In-depth information has been developed to clarify and build your faith. Go behind the scenes and beyond the event to get even more details on the topics discussed. In other words, it's exactly what we think it is.
In-depth topics to convert you. I mean, clarify your faith.
It right. really sounds like, here's why I won.
It's the bonus disc of the debate.
It's the fourth segment of
it's the
debate.
OJ biography. Autobiography.
So please, listeners, don't
why?
Spend...
I mean, how? I mean, if yeah. I did it.
When? No, wait. I'll get this right. I promise.
Don't spend any money that gives any money to Ken Ham. But yes, if you do have a copy of that, send it our way, because that would be amazing. Maybe we'll own that, because Ken Ham is an American, and we'll do a public reading of the Ken Ham Nye debate.
That could be, well, I think if we're going to do that, then it needs to be, so I'm actually doing another event, which is actually much more fun.
Okay.
Than this
yes,
crazy
let's
thing.
Do it on that
let's
event.
Let's do it on that event. Yeah. So I'm doing another event, which is dramatic hangover readings. And so we're literally getting people, I can actually say literally because it's actually about literature. We're asking people to come with literary depictions of hangovers and then read them. And there are some amazing depictions of hangovers. There's also a lot of depictions of hangovers that aren't really hangovers. They're just like interpretations. There's some people who feel that Kafka's Metamorphosis is actually just about a hangover, that he's not a cockroach. He's just really dry mouthed.
Right.
I don't know if he's reached hangover stage yet. He's probably still tripping at that point.
Right.
He hasn't quite.
Well, on that note, I think it's 5:00. We've been at it. The fourth segment is now, I think, half the show. So we should probably move on, I think. And it's 5:00. Post show is happening now. I'd like to go.
Let's go eat some food.
We should go and celebrate the actual show.
Yeah.
Yay.
Oh, boy. And thank you guys for listening. I think we're at Doyle's this week, right?
Yes. Apparently, we're being marched in by the Saudi nationals.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, that's
yes,
what you do.
They have a national anthem, so now all they have to do is that other thing. And
like you said, it sounds like an overture for a musical.
Right. This is what would be playing. Yeah. Let's go out of the lobby.
Take your seats, everyone.
Right. See you guys next week.